If you're a golf lover, join in on fun discussions about golf from the perspective of two plugged-in Minnesota golf geeks, Brad Cole and David Branstad. This is 10,000 Swings.
Hello and welcome back to 10,000 Swings. It is Sunday, May 23rd, 2021. I'm Brad Cole.
I'm David Branstad.
10,000 Swings is brought to you by Jarrett Yalen with Northwestern Mutual. Jared is a good friend of ours, and let's just say we trust him enough to give pretty much anything on the green. For whatever financial questions you have, call Jared with Northwestern Mutual at 612-209-4523. Check out his website at www.jarrettyalen.com.
Do you think retirement planning? Oh, yeah. Do you think I should have Phil call him right now about the 2.16 he just won?
I think Mr. Mickelson could definitely use some advice from Mr. Yalen right now on how to handle that. And again, he could do retirement planning, life insurance, really big paychecks, kind of like the Happy Gilmore ones, you know, the big cardboard ones. So he can do pretty much anything. So give Jarrett a call today. We've got a great show for you this week that will include the PGA Championship, and that's about it. We're going to try to keep it to about an hour. And I think we've got more than enough content with just the PGA Championship. So we'll have some other tour talk as well. But a lot of great stuff from the PGA Championship this week that just wrapped up. And here to break it all down is one of the 156 players from this year's PGA Championship, Derek Holmes. Derek, how are we doing, buddy?
Good. How are you guys? Thanks for having me on.
We're pumped to have someone from the field. It was quite an amazing week for you, and you know, to kind of give our listeners a little bit, for those that didn't listen a few weeks ago, Derek qualified for the PGA Championship by placing in the top 20 at the Club Pro Championship at Port St. Lucie a few weeks ago, and we talked with Derek that week. Derek, that 18th hole at Port St. Lucie and the 30-footer that you made for par in the final hole, has that putt sunk in yet a few weeks later, or is it still just kind of a dream?
A little of both. It's starting to sink in, but it's still, I kind of just go, wow, I can't believe that went in. And then after last week, it's still unbelievable experience.
What are we at now for a tally of random people that you haven't heard from in at least a few months? Are we in the high hundreds? Are we pushing 1,000? Because the amount of people that have seemed to come out of the woodwork, it seems pretty hilarious. Some of the different things that you've heard, you know, and the different requests from people, it's quite crazy, isn't it?
Yeah, it's still it keeps coming. Even when I was in South Carolina, I was getting texts from people I haven't talked to in 10 plus years. So it's been fun but interesting.
Hey, could you just leave me some tickets under the doormat? I appreciate it. No, that's, you know, it's funny. Our good friend Jeff Municki always talked about back in the day, you know, he's worked with the Timberwolves for over 30 years. And when Michael Jordan came into town, there was all of a sudden a lot of people that he hadn't heard from in, you know, 2 to 5 years. That just somehow happened to need courtside tickets to see MJ. So that's, I'm sure that's, you know, it's just funny how things go. But
it's like when Steph Curry's in town and my kids are like, hey, can you call Jeff?
Right. And then they want to wear a Steph Curry jersey to a Wolves
right.
game.
To a Wolves game?
Yeah. Yeah, that goes over well.
Yeah. Not happening.
So Derek, it's Sunday, May 23rd. You got home last night, Saturday, May 22nd. You left on Friday, May 14th, correct? Early in the morning?
Correct, yep. Left a week ago last Friday.
And did you make it to your 8 a.m. shift on Saturday?
I did not make it. I'm going in tomorrow.
How, and that's one of those things where it has to be kind of awkward as you're scheduling the PTO, right? Like, hey, I might be back. I don't know. Maybe things will go well. Maybe I'll stay out on tour for a few weeks. Who knows, right?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of planned on just coming back Monday. That way, you know, if I would have made the cut, had a couple days. But I also just wanted, if I didn't, come back and enjoy a day of unpacking and unwinding before work. Reality sets back in tomorrow.
For sure. If you could talk us a bit through, like, I think most people say, okay, so he got there on Friday. He probably played you know, 18 Friday, 18 Saturday, 18 Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, every day 18, banging a bunch of balls, and then got into it on Thursday. Can you talk a little bit through, like, what Friday through Wednesday look like for those that haven't, you know, watched someone prepare for a major championship?
Yeah, I actually only played 9 holes every day except Monday. Monday's the only day I played all 18 holes. I just hit some balls, rolled some putts, but back 9 Friday, front 9 Saturday, Sunday, front 9 Tuesday, and then back 9 Wednesday. So I tried to see each side a few times, hit some balls. It was kind of just trying to learn where not to hit it, and obviously I didn't do quite well enough with that because I hit it in some spots you weren't supposed to be. But just going about my business and trying to learn the golf course and learn what swing I had that week.
Did you get to play with, like on Friday or Saturday or Sunday, did you play with anyone notable or did you play with some other club pros or who did you play your practice rounds with?
So Friday and Saturday I did play by myself. Sunday we threw the lure out to try and get DJ to bite, but he told us to go get away.
Can you tell the story about, so your brother Devin's on the bag and DJ's brother Austin's on the bag. Can you tell a little story about Devin shooting his shot?
Yeah, so we're on the range and there was another tour guy there. I can't think of who it was. And they were kind of talking and Austin made a comment like, oh, I'm going to see if there's a pin sheet out here. So Devin goes, should I ask him if we can play with him? We're thinking they were going to go out as 2 or maybe 3. So Austin's walking back. Devin goes over there and just kind of mentions, hey, you know, my brother's a club pro, you know, love to join you. DJ doesn't mind. And Austin goes, well, I'll ask him. And about 5 minutes later, they scurried off and they were nowhere to be seen.
It's crazy how that works. I was thinking maybe he was going to give you the, hey, why don't you go and meet us at the 9th green at 9 trick and see how that one works out.
Yeah.
That would have been priceless, actually.
So then on Monday and Tuesday you played. Who'd you play with on Monday and Tuesday?
Monday I played with a couple of club pros from the Met section, Frank Benzel and Danny Balin, who they both played in this several times. So it was good to kind of see their perspective on what they do and how they get ready for it. And then Tuesday was a very fun day. Played with Kevin Streelman and Joel Dahmen, which they were awesome. Had a really good time playing with them.
And Streelman had an unbelievable tournament. He ended up finishing top 10 still, correct? Is that where he fell? Or I know he struggled a little bit today, but actually, what did he shoot? 75 today to finish in T8 still. Pretty cool.
Yeah, yeah, and it was good to see him play well just with talking to him. And it's unbelievable. You know, he's up there in age. I don't want to say. I think he's around 41, 42. He still moves that golf ball, though.
Wait. Hold up. Up there, age at 41, 42? I just turned 41.
Up in age for the tour. How about that?
Okay, good. Not up in age for a club pro, then.
No.
Hey, we got guys that are out here winning at 50, so I don't think that...
Yeah, right?
You know, age doesn't really matter. By the way, I can't... I know we'll talk about it 100 more times, but I can't imagine what it was like for Tiger sitting on the couch today watching Phil win at 50. I'm assuming there's some motivation flowing through the person that doesn't need to be motivated, so that should be pretty good.
What did I say a few weeks ago, Brad, about this? What's Tiger going to do? He's going to come back, and he's going to win the Masters. And this just put more fuel in that tank.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised at all. Again, after what happened today or this week with Phil, nothing surprises me. That was just is incredible. I mean, what I have no clue what his odds were, but I'm assuming they were not very good.
I actually have that.
4,500.
It was 300-1.
300-1
for Phil to win, and there was a bet for $1,000 on that placed.
Wow.
So someone did cash out for 300 grand on this win.
My question now is, though, is the people that are betting $1,000 on the 300-1 guy, like, how much are they also losing that weekend? You know, Did they have 5,000 on Derek Holmes to win this week at, you know, at 1,000 to 1? You know, like, what other bets do they have going? Because they probably have peppered the infield, right? It's probably not just, like, one bet on Phil. I'm assuming there's been – there might be some degenerative tendencies there, so –
Well, with no offense to Derek on this one, Bleacher Report didn't necessarily send me a push notification on that one, nor about his other losses that week. But yeah, 300 grand could have been what he won, and he lost another five. Yeah, right, 2 mil.
Yeah.
So, Derek, I showed up on Tuesday night. We'll call it Wednesday morning as the swing coach. And Andy Smith, first assistant Hazeltine, was with me. He's the physio. And we joined you on Wednesday morning to go check out a practice round at the PGA Championship. And pretty surreal moment, just thinking about where we came from. You know, Derek and I grew up at a $25 to $30 per round daily fee course in the beautiful Ramsey, Minnesota at Rum River Hills. And all of a sudden now we're standing there going to the first tee or the 10th tee at the PGA Championship. And we play with, well, we're on the range. We're talking to some people. It's pretty cool to catch up with some different people we knew from different things. And we go to the 10th tee with Alex Beach, a club professional in New York / Florida. And all of a sudden, Abe Anser comes running up the fairway. And 19th best player in the world right now just runs up and joins us, and could not have been the cool. And I don't know if he normally goes by Abe, but he introduced himself to all of us as Abraham. One of the coolest guys I've ever been around, and it was so effortless. Wouldn't you say, Derek? Like, we just played 9 holes with him, but it's like he didn't even swing, and you know, into a 20-mile-an-hour wind, and he was just effortless.
Yeah, it was. I have not seen that pure of a golf swing 5 feet away ever before. It was the smoothest golf swing I've ever seen, and the ball just never came down. Didn't matter if it was the driver or the sand wedge, it just went, and it was absolutely awesome to watch, and it was great to see him shoot, I believe, 65 today.
Yeah, so he finished in a tie with Streelman for T8, right? So basically, you know, more tour guys should have wanted to play with you in practice rounds, because two guys that played with you finished in the top 10. That's pretty impressive.
Yep.
All right, I want to hear this list again. Brad, you're the swing coach. And Andy's your psyche val. Yeah.
No, physio.
Physio.
Oh, physio. Physio. Okay.
Andy was giving out massages.
Yeah.
How many people do you get, and how, I mean, is there any, like, does Brad have to go up and show like some proof of identification that he's responsible for your golf swing?
Yeah, so I think normally you get a few more, but I got two swing coaches, a physio, and I could have had an interpreter, but I didn't think I could put that on the resume for anyone.
That actually would have been great.
He's my plus Chinese caddy. And a caddy, yes, sir.
Yeah, plus a caddy.
Yeah. And then, my brother-in-law was the other swing coach.
Yeah, it was pretty surreal. So we're out there playing with Abe. And I started talking to him. I brought up, you know, we wanted to give some love to our good friend Jeff Kaiser and Justin Smith. So I brought up the Gopher invite and how he was one of the many big names that have played it. You know, he went to Odessa Community College and then to Oklahoma for 3 years. And he was a huge fan of the Gopher invite. Had a lot of nice things to say about Minneapolis. And then I tried to basically, you know, get him to commit to the 3M Open at that point. And unfortunately, Mike Welch and our good friends at 3M Open are probably not going to be seeing Abe this year in the event, just with how the schedule works. It just doesn't really work for him.
Hey, speaking of Gopher Golf, though, did you see who's ranked number 9 right now?
No.
Our boy from the Gophers.
Number 9 in what?
What do they call it, PJU?
In the PGA Tour University? Awesome.
Yeah. Yep.
So Angus Flanagan, top 10 in the country in the PGA Tour University. So I think that will give him some status, Korn Ferry / McKenzie, coming right out of college.
Yeah, I think he gets some Korn Ferry right out of college.
Beautiful. No, it's So it was cool to talk with Abe about that. And I was talking with him a bit about, you know, he used to have a contract with Nike, both in college and then after college. And when he became a free agent, he's kind of gone on his own. So he started his own clothing company, and now he also started his own tequila company. So kind of a cool thing he's got going there. Just seems like a wonderful guy, incredible ball striker, and cool to see him, you know, obviously playing with Derek, good vibes rubbed off on him to get him a top 10 this week. So it was pretty cool to go through that experience. And afterwards, we're on the range, and it's kind of one of those surreal moments. It's been said for the last year or so that my doppelganger on tour is Harry Higgs. And Harry Higgs comes up to Derek. He's one stall over from Derek on the range. And then guess who comes in right next to him with the entourage trying to break the driving range? Bryson DeChambeau. And it was like nothing you've ever seen before. So they've got these, you know, the players have TrackMans with them, but they've got everything is being monitored on this huge scoreboard on how far you're carrying it. And Harry was hitting iron shots, but Bryson's hitting drivers and Derek's hitting drivers. And Derek's pretty much carry of like 278, 290, wouldn't you say, Derek, about that?
Yeah, 280 was probably a pretty good number in, you know, with the sea level and wind.
Right.
So they're monitoring that at the practice facility for everyone?
It's on a big screen, and the fans are losing their minds. So Bryson has
seen, when did they start doing that?
I don't know if this is just for majors, but it was literally trying to reinforce golf ball whacker guy, because right, they've got it posted up there that the longest carry of the day into the wind at sea level is Rory at 306. And all of a sudden, Bryson's just trying to go to town on, I mean, he is swinging as hard as possible. And he ended up getting to 313, I think was the number. And Derek and I are trying to focus on some things on his swing. And all of a sudden, the crowd just erupts because Bryson, you know, got past 313. And then he had one that he hit even harder. And someone made a joke that it didn't register that, you know, Rory pulled the plug on the power.
Yeah, so Branny here, I don't know if the picture will show it, but I got to find my camera. So that's the scoreboard they have kind of right, and it's got the drives. I know it's not showing very well, but it's got the list of the drives of where people have hit it and how far. So they had Top Tracer on the range, and they had
no kidding
20 cameras, and they'd put people up there. If they were in, it wasn't always driver. It could have been a 7-iron or a wedge. A lot of it was the bigger names that were on the range. At one point, because I was there early Monday, I was only 9 yards behind DJ, so I was very pumped, and that was that picture.
So that would make me so nervous just warming up when you're comparing me to, you know, the top 10 or 20, 30, whatever you want to make it, players in the world, and now you're advertising my stats against them.
Yeah.
That might actually make me more nervous than the first tee box.
Yeah, so my claim to fame over the last 7 days is making John Rahm almost piss himself. We're on the range. It's myself, John Rahm to my right, and next to him is Justin Thomas. There's this Cadillac on the range that is in perfect position if you don't catch it on the center of the face. So I turn around to my caddy and my brother-in-law, and I go, my goal this week is just not to hit that Cadillac. And I mean, it's dead to the right of the range. And John Rahm turns around, and you can tell he's belly laughing and just try not to, like, erupt majorly. But I mean, he heard what I said, and it was the best. It was a great moment, just this look when he turned around because he heard what I said. But it was, you could have put the Cadillac in a worse spot for a Hazel rocket.
That's hilarious. Rahm's a good dude. He seems like a good time.
Yeah.
So we're wrapping up this session after Bryson's trying to just hit these bombs, and Derek and I walk. You know, it's cool. You get to walk over the bridge, right? So you're walking over the bridge with all the fans, and it's, again, you're at the ocean, so it's a pretty amazing experience. And we will walk back over to the putting green, and I actually know and have some connections with both Ricky Elliott and Brooks Koepka. So I started talking to those guys and then introduced them to Derek. And Brooks basically, and this is so cool, it would have been even cooler if Brooks had won, but Brooks basically walked Derek through like what it's like playing at a major, your first major, and then basically just went on about how hard the golf course was. And this is a guy that walks out there, and we all think Brooks walks on water. Like, he is so confident, and he's literally telling another competitor about how scary this golf course is and how hard it is. And he goes, if you start on 10, there's a stretch from 14 through 4 where you might not make par. Like, it's just going to kick your teeth in. And Derek's sitting there, you know, he's already, you know, wearing a diaper, you know, trying to not ruin his pants. And then Brooks says this, and we're like, okay, well, good luck, man. You know?
Yeah,
the guy goes out and almost wins.
This coming from the guy that shows up in majors and majors only. And this is the hardest thing in the world.
Yeah. But it was cool to just hear how real these people are. I think that was really fun. We also had a good conversation with Eric Van Ruyen from the U and Alex Goggard, his caddy, that we know. And we were just talking to them about just how hard it is each week. And it just kind of puts it all in perspective, is that, like, we think these places are impossible. But the guys that are actually doing well also think they're impossible. So it just kind of all brings it together. And my projection, you know, there's a lot of people that, you know, see the scores for the, you know, the 2 days or whatever, and, oh, I would have shot this, I would have shot that. And I'm telling you right now, as a 5 handicap, I pencil myself in for a 113 the first day, and then in the afternoon the second day, and those winds picked up, I'd be 127. And that's if we found my ball every time. Because there's places on holes where you might have to hit 5 or 6 times before you get a ball in play. And again, I'm a 5 handicapper, so... You know, it just goes to show you how hard it is and how crazy it is. And, you know, a guy like Cameron Tringali goes out the first day, shoots 2 under, makes a birdie right away the second day. And then with a birdie on the back nine, he shoots a 48.
Like, dude, I think I said this to you, Derek, off air here. But, like, when a golf course is impossible when you're playing it on a video game, it is not possible to play in real life. Like, this is ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, the back nine, it's got so many tee shots. For the win we played, or at least I played the first 2 days, kind of, I believe it was a southeast wind, east-southeast. On that back nine coming in, the last 5 holes are basically a dead end or a crosswind, and they're all over your left shoulder. And you're hitting the fairways that actually run the opposite way. So you're trying to carry as much as you can, but you can't gamble too much, because if you hit it straight or pull it, you're in the water or a bunker you can't get out of. So you end up bailing out to the right while the wind's going that way, and you end up in the ocean, the beach, or the sand dunes. And it's to Brad's point, you know, there's a big argument. I got into one on Instagram or Twitter because I played with Joel Dahman in a practice round, and he said a 5 handicap on Tuesday would not break 100 in the 20-mile-an-hour wind. And people were calling them out. I shot 86 on Friday. I didn't lose a golf ball.
So oh my gosh.
86, and I didn't lose a golf ball. No penalty strokes.
Not one penalty stroke for 86.
None. Zero.
No, and I'll get into it. We'll go into some details, too, because I want people to hear kind of what the whole experience is like. But it's just crazy how good you can hit it and still not be able to score there. And that's just what it is. So sleep on Wednesday night, feeling pretty good. Get up Thursday morning. We got through the gates at what, 6 a.m.? About 6?
Yeah.
7:22 tee time at a major. And the sun's rising as we're hitting balls on the range. Like, it's just so picture perfect, right? And there's all this... Every day down there, it feels like there's cloud cover in the morning, and then there's all the peel, right? It's just kind of that classic ocean-type situation. So you're hitting balls on the range. You're feeling pretty good. You're doing your thing. You're listening to your AirPods, kind of jiving slash listening to us, but, you know, you're not looking nervous at all. You get taken over to the first tee, and they announce you, and you've listed yourself out of Anoka, Minnesota. And they announce you on the first tee is out of Anoka, Minnesota, Derek Holmes. And the Anoka just killed me. I was just dying. And I don't know if it helped ease the tension at all, but you hit it down the left side. Like, you know, you didn't top it off the first hole, because that's what you're thinking, right? Like, just don't top it. Like, don't, you know, you hit it down the left rough. You hit it just short of the green. you chip it, and an unbelievable chip to about 5 feet and make the putt par. Like, how much confidence did that give you to know that your first hole on the PGA Tour, you just made a par?
Yeah, I mean, let's go back to Monday. So I played a few rounds. I'm going to go back even farther. I played the golf course three times, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, nine holes. I'm like, okay, this is a tough golf course, but it's doable. I get there Monday morning. I hit it so far left on number one, I think they're still looking for it in the neighborhood. It was gone. So then I was like, oh, boy, this is a different golf course. So Thursday, I was actually really comfortable, surprisingly, which was – it was nice. I had nerves, but I wasn't over jumpy or anything. You know, the legs were a little weak, but nothing bad. So to make par number one, and that up and down, I just didn't hit a great second shot. It just didn't jump like I thought it would. But to get up and down from kind of short-sighted – and make that 5 footer on the first hole was really, really big.
No, and you go out on two, you hit a good drive, you hit a good second shot, you've got a small wedge into the green, and you rip it back, but you chip it to a couple feet, make the par putt. So now you got two pars. So, you know, I'm starting to get screenshots that you're T4 as your even par after two holes, and, you know, people are getting excited. Now you get up on three, hit a great tee shot down the right side, hit a wedge, and now they're picking you up. They've got you on TV, and you hit one, and you're staring right into the sun, and you say, picks up on the mic, you say, I can't see it, and Devin goes, it's right at it. And you almost made it. You had a 3 footer or whatever for birdie. Make the birdie. Now you're in a major. You're tied for second at 1-under through 3. And I'm getting, like, my phone, there's not great service at the ocean. And whenever my phone does update, I'm getting every screenshot you can think of. You know, people sending birdie images, every GIF you can think. Like, people are, like, not working right now. Nobody's working back home. They're all watching this. And you get up on four, which is arguably one of the hardest tee shots around. And did you catch the bottom of the club, or did you... just on the toe, or what happened there?
Well, so there's two tee shots, two or three, that I was very uncomfortable in all the practice rounds, and four was one of them. And there's two tee boxes. We played the forward tee box, and the hole, I think, from the back tee box is almost 500, if not. It's like 490. So they moved us up one, and it changes the angle, and I don't even know if I hit the club face. I think it hit the paint on the toe. And I still can't believe it got over, and actually it didn't get over. I guess it landed in the marsh, but I had so much topside spin on it that it bounced out. And I almost got a fairway out of it. It, ended up in the first cut, but it got through. I was 260 probably out, still 270.
On a par four.
And I still probably hit the drive close to 200 yards, so that tells you how long the hole was, still up a tee box. And it kind of jets out in front of the green, so I was back and forth. Do I rip 3 wood, try and get up to 50 yards, or give or take? I tried to play the smart play, hit 4-iron, probably caught it a little heavy, and about 10 yards right of where I was going, and it ended up in just a brutal side hill lie in a little washout area, I guess. Didn't hit an okay shot. It just didn't fly. Kind of the story of the week, where I was about a yard short on several shots and ended in a bunker and didn't get up and down. Made that solid double. So,
right. And so it's funny because you've got the lag on the internet, right, on the app and stuff. So people are, as you just made double on that, well, people are texting me all excited because of the birdie on three. And again, we need to get into this more, but like, everyone's using their phones. You know, a few years back, it was like forbidden to have a phone at a PGA Tour event. And now it's just everyone's on it. People have learned how to keep them quiet for the most part.
Every single spectator there, if you watch this on TV, had a phone out. We're coming off the last major of the Masters, where you have to check your phone at the gate. And all of a sudden, every single person there is doing...
Yeah,
Derek, I got a question. Does that make it more intimidating, or does that not matter?
I honestly, you kind of put it out. I mean, you know, people are videotaping and taking photos and stuff, but you just try and go about your business. I was telling some friends earlier today when we were out for dinner, 17 is a kind of a stadium hole, I would say. They kind of enclosed it a little bit with some grandstands or boxes. When you're walking and standing on the green, it's just a buzz. And all you hear is people talking and it's just a buzz. When you get ready to hit, especially on the green, it just goes away. So it's kind of eerie how the mind just can close stuff off. So I just try and tune it out as much as I can.
I would be nervous as hell with like a million people sitting there videotaping me.
And speaking of that, you know, getting nervous, I know that I probably wouldn't have done well after making the double, but Derek gets up on the next hole, long par three, aiming at the middle of the green, pulls it a little bit, almost makes it for an ace, and you've got a four-footer for birdie, or five-footer for birdie, you make it, so now you're back to even. So pretty awesome start, you're even through five, and we don't have to go through all of the details from there, but it ended up being a 79 that day, and obviously could have been better, could have been worse, could have gone a lot of different ways, but you broke 80 at a major. And I think out of 156 players, you're like 139th or 140th after day one. Does that sound right?
Yeah, pretty close, right in that ballpark.
So you come back day two, and now you're playing in the afternoon. And I think just by playing later, I think you'd already moved up like 15 or 20 spots. You know, like you were up to like 125th. And you get out there, and you're starting on 10. And so starting where Brooks said, hey, you know, you can go that really, really tough stretch with a traditional win, right? And on 10, you just miss birdie. On 11, you just miss eagle. On 12 and 13, you absolutely nuke driver and make bogey on both holes. And so you're one over through four, but it feels like you could have been like two or three under. You know, you're hitting it so good. Was the wind really throwing you off on the greens, or what was happening with some of the – because there's so many diabolical things around the greens, right?
Yeah, so, you know, good shot, good drive on 11, except for the poor drive on 11 the day before. Make birdie, which the putting was brutal the second day, just very uncomfortable. Even that eagle putt, I didn't, when I first hit it, I didn't know if I hit it 6 feet by, 6 feet short. It ended up rolling off to about 6 inches, but – go to 12 and, you know, rip a drive. I want to say I was about 105 yards, 100, right in that ballpark, dead down a 20-mile-an-hour wind. And I carry a 56, and then I go to 64 because I short-sided myself all day long. So it's easier to not have to open up a 64 or 60. So I just play the 64. And I'm just in between clubs. I don't know if it's you hit 64 to the middle of the green or you try and finesse the 56 in there and hope it maybe grabs. But I just watched, I believe it was Ben from the fairway, also a little farther back, hit and it goes through the green. So I made the decision, okay, hit 64, hit 95 yards or whatever and get it to 15 feet short of the hole. Ends up landing again like a foot short of the green and barely trickles on the green. So now I got about a 35, 40 footer, hit it hole high, but a little left, missed that putt, hit a good putt, but the wind was coming across and just snapped it. So make bogey there. Same story on 12, in between, I got about 125 to the pin, 130. I try and hit sand wedge, hits just short of the green. Or no, I had 125, pin was front right, and hits about a foot short of the green and doesn't bounce forward. If it goes a foot further, I'm within probably 10 feet. So maybe played those holes a little timid, just not trying to make a big mistake, and then I three-putted. Both of them, unfortunately, just bad putts, little wind-inated. It was so hard to just stay steady. I don't play 20-mile-an-hour winds with nothing around very often, so it was just uncomfortable. And, you know, you make par there, I think it could have been a different story, but probably got down a little bit on myself just playing those holes downwind, when I could have turned, you know, two under into one over.
Yeah, no, for sure. And that's the thing is that the other thing I thought was really interesting with the course is you could kind of see the spots where they had watered and where they hadn't. As a spectator, you know, you're up a little bit higher on the hill on the side, And you could kind of see, like, this little patch here had been watered a little bit more, and it grabbed as soon as you hit, whereas this patch over here was super dry and rolled out. You know, it's amazing to me how tough it is to pick the exact right spot for the landings. And your spin, you know, you and I talked about it a bit, but I think that's the biggest difference, when you say, of, like, being successful at different levels is just how much you have to control your spin. Side spin, front spin, back spin, everything. Like, there's just so many different little things that you did that blew up in different ways that made your score higher, and you didn't hit it that bad. It just, you know, the wind caught it a little bit this way, you caught a little bounce that way. It's just another level, right? Is really what it comes down to. Is just, you know, these guys do this all day, every day, but they just, their spin control is incredible.
Yeah, I played with George Coetzee. I'm not sure exactly how to say the last name. And definitely a very unique golf swing. Looks like he should hit a 50-yard cut with no wind, and the ball goes dead straight, even with a left-right wind. And you just go, how is that possible, looking at this golf swing? But he squares it up, and, you know, the wind did affect a few of them, but those were bad swings. And if I didn't catch it solid, or even on some that I did catch solid, it was just the wind took it like no other, nothing going on. It was like, wow, that's 30 feet right of the hole, when I thought I hit a really good shot. So their spin control and just control in general is unbelievable.
Brandy, what would you say is the number one thing when you're teaching players, higher level players, you know, how to work wind shots? Because it seems like that's a lot of what it is, that, you know, these types of majors, you know, what do you do to work on controlling spin better and to dial in spin? Because for me, it was just incredible watching how, like, Brooks and some of those guys were able to essentially just play right through the wind. And obviously it wasn't the same for everyone else. Like, what is the difference there? What's the biggest thing you work on as an instructor, especially, like, side winds? And anytime there's, like, a lot of force carries and that type of stuff, and you just have to maximize, you know, everything, what do you do to work on that?
So that's a really good question. And for me, especially for better players, it's how you flight the ball, and it's the direction that you get the ball coming in to the green. Because if you can flight it correctly, and I work with players, good players, all the time on flighting this. And because depending on how you can flight it, you can control the wind. Not that you'd ever control wind, but you control what your golf ball is doing a little bit better coming into that green. And it's tricky because, and I remember an article I read in, I think it was Golf Digest a few months ago, and Tiger was talking about how to create left spin, right spin on greens. And he goes, you know, I hit this slope, I've got to have this spin. And it's like, okay, I understand he's Tiger Woods, but to me, it's about ball placement, and it's about length of swing and how to control your trajectory. And when you can do that stuff, you can flight it in there differently, and you can spin it a little bit differently. Just know where you have to land it. Now, there's courses too. I mean, he was a great example. Like, you get some 20-mile-an-hour winds in there, that is very difficult with some of those hole locations and greens. But I'd say if you're a good player, you got to work on flighting it and working on how to control your shot shape into that green. So know how to hit cuts, know how to hit little draws, know how to get the ball to spin left, know how to spin it right. For most average recreational golfers, hit it solid. Because if you can hit it solid, the wind affects it less.
Yeah, and it's just crazy, because when you have a 7,800-yard course and a 20 to 30-mile-an-hour wind at all times and no trees, like, it's just, it's so hard.
It's 9,000 yards.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of shots that were impossible, and that's what's so crazy. So after, you know, the first 2 days, there's a wind going one direction where the last five holes were dead into the wind. And then yesterday, it was a little bit of a crosswind, correct, on Saturday? And then today on Sunday, it was basically a reverse wind, correct, where the last five holes were downwind?
Yeah, I mean, yesterday, I think there was, I think it was like 7 miles an hour, but it did tweak a little bit. But today, it went back to more of the 2012 wind, where the last holes played downwind. And you saw it, even number two was into it for the first 3 days, and most guys were laying up, or they were hitting irons into it today, some guys, where guys were laying up with hybrid to get to 100 yards in the first couple rounds.
The Meadows at Mystic Lake has modified its golf policies to follow the COVID-19 public health recommendations and welcomes you to play this award-winning public golf course. It offers a unique, challenging, and scenic golf experience. The Meadows at Mystic Lake is a full-service golfing destination, enhanced by nearby food and entertainment, including the Meadows Bar and Grill and Mystic Lake Casino Hotel. It's never too early to book a tee time or shop the pro shop. Stop in or visit golfthemeadows.com. That's golfthemeadows.com. Owned and operated by Shakopee Midwakanton Sioux Community.
That's just absolutely crazy. One of the things, speaking of spin, that I want to talk about, so on hole 16, we're in the practice round on Wednesday, and from 120, we're dead into the wind, and Abraham comes over, and he's going to hit a 5-iron from 128. Again, he's a boomer sooner, right? He knows all about Oklahoma golf, so he can do all sorts of crazy things with spin. And he bets his caddy that he can't knock it closer than the original shot that he hit. He hits it with a 5-iron from 128, which I have to assume Abraham's 5-iron probably goes 210.
Yeah, I would bet.
From 128, he hit it to like 30 feet, 40 feet.
And he hit it green.
He started it like 50 yards left and just hit this big bleeder. It just right up in the air. The thing was, it was coming backwards at the end. It was pretty impressive. So out, and then Derek hits it with a, did you hit a 6-iron?
No, so I grabbed the 5-iron also. Beach comes out of the bunker, so he hit 5-iron. So Alex is talking to his caddy, and I mentioned like it was kind of a trick shot. Alex didn't hear any of us talking about it. He looks at his caddy and goes, well, give me 6-iron. And I'm kind of like, well, no, the shot is a 5-iron opened up.
Yeah.
He takes full swing 6-iron from 120. And he probably hit it 150, 160 yards.
That thing was close to 17 tee box, where there's always people standing. And let's just say he let that ball be.
Yeah, he didn't go look for it. It was, and we kind of looked at him like, dude, it was, he opened up. He goes, oh, I didn't know. Like, it was just, oh boy. He was not in on the joke, I guess.
He definitely missed the memo on that one. Talk a little bit, since we're on 17 right now, talk about what it's like being on that tee box, you know, in your practice round on Wednesday. So after that whole thing went down, Abe's caddy goes, hey, $20 closest to the hole, I'll give you guys 6 feet. And so Abe hits one, smokes a little hybrid to 30 feet from the hole, 20 feet from the hole.
Yeah, which is a phenomenal shot.
It's unbelievable. And Derek gets up there, decides to not tee it up, and doesn't cold top it, but it definitely didn't get past the middle of the pond.
Yeah.
And then you hit another one, and you pulled that one over to the left. So then you hit another one. You hit that pin high right. So now we're on ball number 4, and Roy McAvoy decides to give it a go. Actually, Derek turns to the crowd and says, does anyone have another ball? Try to get the crowd excited after they just watch him hit 3 not-so-great shots. And then you hit it to, what, 25 feet? It was at it the whole way.
Yeah.
So it's kind of fun. But that hole is just ridiculous, right? Like, you saw people hitting it 40 to 60 yards left. There was a guy when you were on hole 10 on Friday that hit it across your green. He had about 80, I think it was Rex Hogard, had like 85 yards to the pin still after his tee shot on a par 3.
Yeah, it was probably the hardest par 3 I've ever played, because there's, from both tee boxes we could have played, it's all over water. And there's a bailout area left, but it's in two bunkers. Well, the bunkers out there don't have a ton of sand in them, so they're fairly firm. So now you're hitting across a green, if you hit it into one of those bunkers, to water, and the green basically slopes that way. It is the first round, I think it was playing 210, give or take. Dead into the wind, I hit 19-degree hybrid. I don't know if I've hit a hybrid better than that. I normally hit the 19 if it's in the bag, 230, 240. It barely got hole high. So that's how much into the wind was. I think it was actually one of my only shots on TV. I think my ball speed was 149. I mean, it just it's like the ball just into that wind doesn't go anywhere. And the height on it was like 90 feet. So it didn't get high. I mean, it just doesn't go anywhere into that wind.
it was just crazy how hard some of these holes were, and I'm proud of you for not quitting, because it's a real challenge out there. And I think what Sam Burns withdrew and Wai Ying got DQ'd for an incorrect scorecard, so at least you didn't have either of those show up. So it was 79-86, 165, beat a few people, and then tied a couple other club professionals. Tied Omar Uresti, right, who won the National Club Pro, so that's pretty cool.
Yeah, you know, the 40, I made the turn in 46 and was not happy. So the 40 on the front was not great, but I held it together. It very easily could have been another 45, 46, but I was just trying to enjoy the moment on that back nine. And, you know, a couple bad putts on that. I just, mine wasn't 100% into it, but still a great experience.
No, for sure. And that's one thing that was kind of cool. So, you know, you missed a cut, but you didn't have to be to work on Saturday. So you could still kind of work your way back to normalcy. Now, you know, on Monday you'll go back into the store. And a good time to talk about one of our sponsors, PXG Southdale. It's a store that Derek runs. So if you've enjoyed listening to Derek tonight, stop by PXG, come say hi to him. He can fit you for a new putter, wedges, new Gen 4 clubs, you name it. So they've got all sorts of different things, and PXG is so much more than just high-end price points. They have some other price points as well, so they do have something for everyone. And if nothing else, you can go in and get a nice bucket hat to help with protecting any sun stuff that you could run into. So go check out the store today. Derek, has it been pretty crazy? I mean, this whole spring has been nuts at the store, right? When you've been there, when you haven't been out on tour?
Yeah, it's kind of been a weird spring. I feel like I haven't been there very much. But, yeah, it's been a pleasant surprise how golf is still very busy, very popular. Store record numbers the last couple months, so it's good to see.
That's awesome. So we turn to Saturday, and I don't know how much you were able to watch this week, Brandon, but Corey Connors had the day one lead. Phil had the day two lead, correct? And going into Saturday, I think he shot 31 on the second nine on Friday.
I think you're right on that one, yeah.
So now all of a sudden he's, you know, right into it going into Saturday. And again, Phil Mickelson, folks, this guy's 50. He's not ranked in the top 100 in the world. Incredible that he's even in the mix. And all of a sudden Saturday, you know, he had the lead and he starts going on a run. At one point on Saturday, I think he had a putt to go up six on Saturday.
He was, you know, all weekend, this was just back and forth. This was a, like I said on air, this was a boxing match. It's like, here's round one, here's round two. Here's hole one, here's hole two. And let's just see how this swings and just see what happens. And it was... I'll tell you what, it was an exciting weekend of golf. I mean, I think we're all pumped. I guess I'm speaking for everyone here, but we're all pumped to see Phil win. I mean, that's pretty cool to be now the oldest major winner in golf, and especially doing it such a hard course. And we all know what his regimen's like to play well. So, yeah, I mean, what a great weekend of golf.
Derek, based on what you saw from Phil this weekend, what do you think was the difference in getting him the win? What were the big, you know, we always know he's got a lot of creativity. For me, part of the surprise is how well he drove it and how far he was driving. Like, dude's 50 and he's out driving Brooks, who's like one of the longest hitters on tour.
No, it's the sunglasses.
Yeah, they got to have something in them. But
does anyone else wear sunglasses on tour?
Hey, it looked like he was chomping on something pretty good today. He must have had some sort of good gum because he was definitely chomping away.
His CBD gum was in there today and held his eyes behind the sunglasses. But can you guys play golf in sunglasses? Because I cannot.
I typically wear sunglasses.
Do you?
Yeah. I mean, they're a light. They're not that dark. They're a very light shade. But I played with them both days. Typically, I take them off when I putt, depending on the green. But I don't wear the dark ones like Phil does.
I literally cannot find where the golf ball is with sunglasses on. It's like chunk city. I will hit 6 inches behind the ball with sunglasses on. So rather embarrassing when you're teaching with sunglasses on, then you demonstrate something, forget to take them off, and oops. Yeah, that 6 iron just went 40 yards.
So it got pretty interesting yesterday. You know, Brooks was battling right there with Phil, and so was Louis. You know, it was good. And today, in the first hole, Phil's up one. The two-stroke swing on the first hole, I think that was the first of five two-stroke or bigger swings between these two. Branny said, it was a boxing. It was crazy every hole. Because after the first hole, it's like, oh, man, Brooks is going to run away with this. And then after the second hole, you're like, wait, what just happened? It's a three-stroke swing on the second hole.
Yeah, I mean, it was interesting because Brooks, they said when he was on number two, I believe, his stroke average on the par fives for the first three rounds was 4.25, number one in the field. He's destroying the par five. And then he goes makes double. I mean, you couldn't have just rolled him off. I mean, it was just unbelievable. And then he bogeys seven. So the guy that was leading the par fives for the first three rounds is three over on the front nine on the par fives.
Yeah, you know, if you think about it, so he's averaging 4.25. So let's call it a little over four, essentially, and that's what it is. And he had a seven and two sixes, and then he made a four on 16, excuse me. So the four sounds about right, but the two sixes and the seven, let's make those all pars. Let's make those all pars in the four. So he's still a little bit higher than his average. That's four strokes, folks. He wins this tournament by two. Isn't that crazy? Like, just doing – and it's the par fives. And the par fives never kill Brooks. Like, it was just absolutely crazy to me. And the funniest part is that the par fives and his putting are what killed him. And that was the exact same thing that killed Rory this week, were par fives and putting. So I think Rory finished at plus five, 12 shots back. But they said, you know, between his putting and the par fives – and another one, too, like Louis had so many putting mishaps because Louis' ball striking was incredible this week. Louis Oosthuizen, again, with another – wait, is that another T2 at a major for Louis?
Did Rory really – Rory was plus five for the event?
I believe that's where he finished.
So then shout out to low club professional Ben Cook, plus four.
How about that? Yeah, good Ben Cook, what is that T44, Derek? What do you think that check was? Probably 30 grand?
I bet it's 50.
50?
In a major? I mean, winner, I know it drops off, but winner probably getting close to two. I would think a top 50 has got to be 40, 50 grand. So
yeah.
That's a payday.
Second place got 1.3. Yeah. And I know it drops off, but like this was, other than the U.S. Open, this is the largest purse there is.
Yeah, I would... I know, was it Webb Simpson and his caddy were talking after Saturday round? I believe Ben shot 69. Like, why is this guy not out here? His ball striking is phenomenal. So, shout out to Ben, and good to see at least one club pro. Actually, two made the cut, but good to see him finishing in the 40.
What did where did Merrick finish? I think Merrick was 78,
yeah,
plus 12. 78, 76 on the weekend. I think Merrick got a lot of love just for the warm-up routine. I think he took Miguel and El Jimenez to the next level. That was quite the warm-up routine. It was almost like he was, you know, showing you where to, you know, if you're at an event and you're parking, and he's like showing you the direction or where you're supposed to land the plane. His arm movements on the range were priceless, but it was good stuff. So, you know, a lot of great storylines. I just think that it's so cool that they have 20 club professionals that get to play in this every year because it's always just a really cool thing to follow, you know, what the people do for a living that are PGA Class A professionals. And they can still get it around and obviously, you know, go play with the best. Derek, what was the biggest thing you noticed that surprised you? Comparing yourself to other guys out there, like what was the biggest thing that surprised you, positive or negative? Like what was the biggest shocking point?
You know, you got your guys that are big, you know, DJ's tall, but a lot of them aren't much bigger than the average person. You see on TV and you're like, oh, that guy's huge. He hits it 350. Abraham Answer is maybe 5'7" and bombs it. And you know, he works out, he's got swing coaches, but they're all average. I mean, they're a little taller. Matt Fitzpatrick is my size. You know, a little skinnier. He doesn't hit the beer as much as I do, probably. But he just They're nothing. Rory's 5'9". They're
is
all
it Justin? Use. Justin Thomas is tiny too, right?
5'10", maybe.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Ricky's pretty small. Jordan's pretty small. Like it's a good point. They're very normal size human beings, right? It's not like NBA players where they're all extremely tall and, you know, like even Ricky Rubio looks tiny out on the court and he's 6'4", right? So it's one of those things. You know, Derek, you made a good point there. You talked about your weight and drinking beer. Did want to remember here, we do have an awesome new sponsor, Corona Premier. And funny thing about Corona Premier, I was talking with Abe Anser about sponsorship and that stuff and maybe getting his tequila on our show. And he said that he was actually, for a couple weeks, he was actually wearing the Corona Premier logo on his shirt as they introduced it this spring. So that was pretty cool. So if David Brand said Brad Cole telling you to drink Corona Premier doesn't do it for you, maybe Abraham Anser will. Again, it's their new 90-calorie beer, super light. If you feel like you're putting on too many pounds by the beer you're drinking, try it. Less calories, less carbs, and again, perfect for those warm summer days. So kind of fun to always think about how we can work beer into it.
I had one today while doing yard work.
Love it. So speaking of beer, local businesses that we supported this week, you know, we always want to make sure we don't forget about those. And because I wasn't here, the local businesses I supported, one of my favorite ones, Yuengling, great East Coast beer. We had a few Yuenglings, Derek. They were delicious as always, and enjoyed those. And then again, Abe Anser has a new tequila company, Flecha Azul. Ultra premium tequila. Should go check it out. And again, great conversation with him about, you know, what it's like to kind of be a free agent. And he said, "Yeah, I'm gonna go get a tequila company." I made a reference that he sounded kind of like Turtle on Entourage, and he said he was rewatching it. I think for the 9th time now, all of Entourage. So,
I will rewatch that whole series at some point again. Not the movie, but the actual seasons. Oh my gosh, that was priceless.
He said that. Ari Gold is his spirit animal and is his favorite actor or favorite character of all time, which I thought was pretty pretty fantastic. So.
I don't think he's that far off. I really don't.
And we had some Lloyd conversation after that that probably can't all go on the air. But so, Branny, any local businesses you're able to support this week?
Yeah, I had one big one that I supported this week that's actually supporting us right now, Map Transportation. Courier business, and I needed some golf balls sent to someone really quick, and they were able to do it in like hours notice. We had to punt a little bit this week with some internet issues, so we were broadcasting from their CEO and owner's home, and he had walk-up music that you and I picked out for the Zurich playing for us as we're coming in to the driveway. I think you had Enter Sandman, I had Jukebox Hero, and that was how we got introduced to the home.
And I was honestly so jacked up, I was ready to nuke driver like 240 and not carry anything at Kew Island after hearing my walk-up song. But it was pretty awesome, so they're doing some good work over there. So great to give them a little shout-out. D, how about you? Any good? You weren't here, but anything local you want to talk about?
I mean, I'm going to go with that East Coast beer, that Yuengling again, too, because that, you know, is phenomenal. Anytime I go to that East Coast, it's got to pick up a case of Yuengling.
Awesome. Cool. Hey, as we wrap up here, Derek, anything else you want to share about the week? It's been great having you on, but any fun little nuggets or funny things or anything good you want to share from the week that we didn't talk about yet that you want to get out there? I know your brother actually texted me and asked me if I could bring him some solar sleeves because he was getting burnt so bad. And then those solar sleeves actually didn't cover the top of his hand, so the top of his hand was quite red. Andy's a golf professional that doesn't often wear shorts and hasn't seen sun in some time, so he decided to put a little bit of sunblock on the back of his legs, but you could see where his hands were. So you kind of got that whole camouflage look for the red spots and the white spots on the back of his legs. Any other good ones you want to share, D?
Yeah, it's just if you're a golfer, you just go play golf, have fun. Hopefully one day you get the opportunity to play in a tour event or anything. but these guys are human. Just, you know, they hit a white golf ball for a living. Some hit yellow ones, but they're all human. They do the same thing you and I do every day. They're just a little better at hitting a golf ball, but go have fun and enjoy it.
No, that's good stuff. And actually, we sat, you know, we were just having a good time with Van Rooyen and Gaugert. And then he was played quite well on Thursday, and he was playing well Friday. And all of a sudden, things went south on Friday. And I can tell you, like, for anyone that's questioning his behavior, he's a really good dude. He had a melting point. We've all been there. Unfortunately, the cameras were just on him on Friday on hole 17, and a pretty unfortunate situation. And if you need to see the video, you can go Google it. But Eric Van Rooyen, really good dude. Alex Geiger, good dudes. These guys just, you know, it was basically one of those things that it was building, right? With all the, you know, he went from being right there to all of a sudden he's going to miss the cut. And then he hits a ball that lands on the edge of the green, and all of a sudden it bounces and rolls into the water. And things just escalated quickly. So,
yeah.
But human beings, right? That's what it all comes down to, is we're all human beings. And I think it was so cool to see your ball flight next to these guys, because it made them all, in my opinion, very humanized. Like, they hit it just like you do. It really comes down to, can you make putts, and can you control the spin? Can you control the bounces as much as possible, right?
Yeah, I mean, you hear it all the time that your best shot is as good as their best shot. But where is your miss compared to their miss? And I saw it a few times this week where my miss was in the beach or in the dunes, and theirs stayed in the rough. So it's working on the miss, understanding your ball flight. And I'm taking a lot away from it. There's a video of me on 18. Actually, it's all three of our group, on myself and Coatsy. And I'm just looking at where my club is at the top of the swing, and it's laid off compared to those two. Well, I had a lot of pushes, and that's what we were kind of working on this week, was my ball started right. So one thing I took away from this is I just got to get it a little more down the line at the top of my backswing, instead of laid up, because I think that causes me to push it a little bit under pressure.
You know, it's the one thing I preach to all of my students, and I don't care what level of player you're at. Your good shots are your good shots, right? But where are your misses going? And do you know where your misses are going? Because if you can control that, I mean, I remember Tiger Woods saying, he was at the British Open, and they asked him, like, how many good shots did you hit today? Like, what was your, he's like, I hit like two. Well, because he hit two that he drew up how he wanted, and everything else was just controlling miss hits. Well, he's done pretty good for himself.
Yep.
It's so true, though, because you just can't plan on flushing everything, right? And you have to plan on the miss. And what is your miss? And like you said, just trying to get that consistent miss is so tricky when it's that windy, right? And it's that challenging. Because then if you start losing them right, well, then all of a sudden then you overcorrect, and then you just go left. And now we got the two-way miss going with the wind, with the bounces, and all of a sudden, you know, it's just crazy. Because, you know, you sit there on the range and I watch your ball flight next to all these guys, and it is the exact same. So it's kind of cool. The hard part is, when are you going to find time, you know, in your schedule of being a father, being a husband, being, you know, a store manager, being a golf professional here, like, when are you going to have time to be able to vote to it like these people do? And that's what's so cool for them, whether they have a sponsor or someone to help them. But at least, you know, you know, you've been there. You can get back there. You know what it takes. And, you know, what do you have up next, Derek? Do you have anything? You have the tape mark?
Yeah, tape mark in a couple weeks. If my golf clubs make it back, I ship stick them home. So hopefully I have golf clubs in a couple weeks.
Well, but you being the stock player that you are, you could probably grab a set off the rack at the store and just be just fine, right?
Yeah, I'll just hit some out there and hope to shoot a good number.
That's awesome. Well, hey, Derek, we can't thank you enough for being on the show, and the experience this week, and all the people back in Minnesota following you, is pretty surreal deal, and just really cool to be a part of it. So thank you so much for coming on and talking about all that. And we'd also like to thank our sponsors, Jarrett Yalen with Northwestern Mutual, PXG in the new store in the Southdale Mall, and Corona Premier. You can always connect with us via email at 10kswings@scorenorth.com. Please subscribe to our show wherever you get your podcasts, Apple, Spotify, Score North, and give us a 5-star rating. For episode 14 next week, we will have Brad Sater, who is in the know in the Dallas golf market, on the show to break down the Charles Schwab Challenge. Until next week, friends, I'm Brad Cole.
I'm David Branstad.
Here in America, work is in trouble. We've offshored our manufacturing, sent away good jobs, and lost so much ability to make things. American Giant is a company that's pushing back against this tide. They make high-quality clothing, sweatshirts, jeans, dresses, jackets, and so much more right here in the USA. Visit American-Giant.com and get 20% off your first order when you use code STAPLE20 at checkout. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com, promo code STAPLE20.